Welcome to the Living Waters Church podcast.
Series, a study all through the summer, looking at the fruit of the Spirit as listed in the book of Galatians. And today we are looking at joy. Last week was love, this week is joy. So turn to the person next to you and say, are you just brimming with joy right now? Are you overflowing with joy? Some of you are. Others of you are young parents, and so you say, no. Luke, you ignorant fool, I'm tired. But I'm getting there. Others of you are going, if it didn't feel like January, then yes, I would be. So as we said last week, we looked at love, and Leanne taught that the world is filled with all kinds of different human love. But it always runs out and will always crave more. So much so to the point that we will posture and perform for it. But the love that we really need comes from God, of course. And since God is love, his love never runs out, and it will fulfill and sustain us in ways that we could never be otherwise fulfilled and sustained. And she challenged us, actually, towards the end of the message, hinting that perhaps as Christians sometimes we feel guilty and that we don't feel like we're being loving enough. And she said, perhaps it's not that we need to try harder to love better. Perhaps we need to learn how to receive God's love in deeper, more consistent ways. And let his love overflow from us to others. So it was a simple challenge, but I know it was profound for many of us in the room as we heard it. Again, to be reminded of the deep, beautiful, overflowing love of Christ and how we need to engage with it daily, weekly, consistently in order to actually understand what it is to be a Christian and actually impact the world around us. So today we're looking at joy. We're going to look at each one of these all through the summer. What is joy is a question that I want to ask today. What is Christian or godly joy? I think that growing up, I had a couple of different perspectives of joy, if I'm honest with you. The first one was that there isn't any, or that it doesn't exist. That Christian joy or godly joy isn't real, because Christianity is about taking Jesus and the gospel seriously. And I knew a lot of Christians who were stern and serious and rule followers, and I found myself falling into that category. So Christianity was about serving, and it was about suffering. Jesus suffered. You're going to suffer, so get used to it. And I felt like that was something I picked up along the way. If you want to take Jesus and his work seriously, you have to be serious and look like that old curmudgeon-y looking gentleman on the screen. The other perspective that I had growing up of joy or Christian joy was that of delusional happiness. example there. So to me, some Christians, they seemed unbelievably happy, literally unbelievably happy or unconvincingly happy. It either seemed forced or in some way unattainable for me. Somebody like me to connect, it seemed ridiculous. The other way I describe this is someone who is annoyingly happy. Now, be honest, have you met somebody who's annoyingly happy? And you just, like, don't be happy at me right now. I don't need you to be happy at me. Just be quiet right now. I'm sort of like that in the morning, that's for sure. And when I used to carpool with people to work and school and stuff, I'd be one of those people that gets in the car and there's no music. Like, don't turn on your pop music or your country first thing in the morning. Don't talk to me. Just let it slowly, like, build to something. And don't start talking to me right away. I just need time to settle. This perspective of sort of Christian joy being annoyingly happy or or not understandable or unconvincing has sort of flowed into pop culture, as we see in examples of television and movies and stuff like that, and it sort of bleeds into the rest of our culture. A lot of people were influenced, obviously, by their neighbors and their friends, but perhaps by shows like this. And let's just run the video quick, John. It'd be great.
I got that joy down in my heart.
Where?
Down in my heart to stay. And if the devil doesn't like it, he can sit on a tack.
Ouch!
Sit on a tack.
And I know that there are many different perspectives of this television show, and I do also know that the great evil and enemy of Christianity has always been and will always be cartoons. But I just want to say that perhaps we can see this as an example of how our culture sometimes perceives Christian joy. They're so happy. They're so filled with joy. There's something so alive in them. They're singing in their sleep. And Bart Simpson and Homer Simpson and the rest of the family goes, I don't understand that. And then at some point, you see in the series, if you watch it, that Homer clues in and he actually starts to take advantage of Ned Flanders constantly by always stealing his stuff. And I thought that was fantastically funny. But what is this joy? So these have been some of my perspectives of joy growing up as I've grown up in this culture. Joy in the past. And I've wondered, do I really understand or know what joy is? If I ever think it's this delusional happiness that I can't seem to attain, or it's this thing that really shouldn't be there, that perhaps it's about being a serious Christian and taking Jesus and the gospel seriously. But when we look at the scriptures closely, we actually see we have painted for us a very clear picture of joy. A very clear picture. And it's odd, I feel, that I've missed it. It's odd that I think many of us have missed it. Maybe we haven't missed it entirely, though. Maybe we simply didn't know that what we were experiencing was joy. Because in our culture, joy is so easily confused with happiness. And our culture is obsessed with happiness, with which often it simply equates to pleasure. Having a life that is good and is easy, and joy gets all mixed up in that. And so this sustainable, deep Christian joy that we hear talked about by some people, we might recognize in others, but don't always understand ourselves, can be hard to fully grasp. So I want to begin by talking about joy, as we have, and we're going to continue to talk about all of these different kinds of fruit within Galatians, by looking at where it comes from. So we're going to talk about divine joy for a little bit first. If the fruit of the Spirit, as Doug taught in the first message that we looked at, are evidences or the produce of our relationship with God, and if, as we've seen, the fruit is simply the character of God found in our lives, this leads me to a really simple question. Is God joyful? Is God joyful? And that leads me to more questions. What is divine joy? What gives God joy? Why does God have joy? And I realized that over the years I didn't really understand or have a very clear perspective or picture of a joyful, happy even, God. The really good news today is we're going to look at this topic. And the answer to the question, is God joyful, is unequivocally, absolutely, yes. And that is a good thing. We have a God who is full of joy. We serve a God who is genuinely happy, who is overflowing with joy. And we're going to look at some of those reasons today. And I think before we can understand what joy is to us that is supposed to come from God, we need to understand what joy is to the divine. Why is God filled with joy? There's several reasons and several causes for divine joy. So we're going to look at four of those right now. First of all, we see that God finds joy in himself and his self-sufficiency. We see this listed in the Psalms as God is aware that he has everything. He's created everything. He's completely self-sufficient. And in that, he is pleased. He is filled with joy. God is the source of all things, as we see from Paul in Acts 17. He has no need, and therefore he's the only self-sustaining, he's the only self-sufficient being in the entire universe. Everything comes from him. He's totally blissful, or totally blessed, we might say. He's totally fulfilled. And this is difficult for us to wrap our minds around, because we aren't totally blissful. We aren't always totally filled. We always do have needs. We constantly need to fulfill our needs. But imagine a person who has everything they've ever wanted, who is everything they ever wanted to be. Have you ever looked at somebody like that in your workplace or in your family or in your friend circles and go, look at what they've got? They've got the looks, they've got the money, they've got the family, they've got the lifestyle, they've got the characteristics. They must be happy. Have you looked at somebody like that even this week? They must be happy. And yet time and time again, especially in celebrity culture, we look at people and they get to a certain point, clearly you must be happy, and they say time and time again, I'm not. There's something missing. So it's hard for us to get that there is a being out there, that God is completely and utterly, totally fulfilled and joyful. And that's who he is. Everything is at his fingertips. He's totally complete. He lacks nothing. And because of that, he's totally filled with joy. All good things come from God. Joy is a good thing, and that comes from him as well. He's totally filled with joy. Everything originates from him. And this means that he's not only the source of it, but he's also the enjoyer of it. So not only does God enjoy the fact that he is self-sustaining, that he is completely fulfilled and in control, but he actually is the originator of joy, but he enjoys joy at the same time. Does that make sense? Secondly, we find that God finds joy within the relationship of the Trinity. And this mystery of the Trinity is often confounding for us. It's difficult to understand that God is three, but he's also one. But in this relationship he has with himself, he also finds joy, because God is community. And within this community, he shares the joy of all things with himself. C.S. Lewis said this, who had some great perspectives on the Trinity. Perhaps the most important difference between Christianity and all other religions is that in Christianity, God is not a static thing, but a dynamic, pulsating activity, a life, almost a kind of drama, almost, if you don't think me irreverent, a kind of dance. There's a relationship between the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. I came across another writer who said, if you think about being completely fulfilled, being completely happy, having everything you want, being totally complete, having like the best day ever, think about that. What's the only thing that makes that even better? It's sharing that with somebody else. And within his nature, God enjoys that Trinitarian relationship. Good pleasure between the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. And the Spirit can often be the expression of that. So this beautiful relationship, God is fully fulfilled within himself, self-sustaining life force of the universe. He's got this pulsating activity within himself where he's finding relationship within himself as well. And also we find, number three, that God finds joy in creation. Yesterday I was with a group of friends. We were celebrating that my friend was going to be getting married in a month. And so we kind of did this typical North American cultural activity called the bachelor party. And I'm tired because of it. And we had a blast. We went out into the backwoods here in Mission, and we went hiking up a riverbed. And there must have been, I don't know how many moments during that day, where we stopped in the middle of creation and went, we get to live here. We get to live here. And we live in a particularly incredible place in the world, in British Columbia. But we were just taking it in. It was absolutely incredible. The fresh water, the trees, the animals, the sunburn even, feeling it on your face. It's absolutely incredible. God finds joy in his creation. We're told this at the very beginning of the scriptures. At the end of Genesis chapter 1, we find God having completed the cosmos. He's finished and he's made everything. As he's gone through, he's named things good. He creates plants and animals, calls them good. Land masses and oceans and water, all kinds of things. And after every act, he says, that's good. When he comes to the end of the creation week, as we see in Genesis, he sits back and then he calls everything very good. He says, that's very good. There's joy in that statement. He's so happy with his work, actually, that he sits back and he appraises it. He sees that it's amazing and he's pleased by it. He finds joy in that creation. And then we're told at the beginning of Genesis 2, which comes right out of that, that God rests from his work after creating all those things on the Sabbath. And so he doesn't need rest because he's tired, does he? But the word for rest is that God stops, that he is completed, that he's finished. And there's a sense in the Hebrew that he's almost sitting back after his creative work is finished. He calls it very good, and he just sort of savors it. He's made it all. It's this incredible, beautiful universe. He sits back. It's very good. And he just enjoys it. That's the sense that we get from Genesis. I got to do some scuba diving in the summertime. I have a friend who is an instructor, and so I got to go for free. It was awesome. And we just swam around, and he just kept picking stuff up and giving it to me. Look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this. This is incredible. And you're just absolutely overwhelmed. I was talking with a friend this past week as well, and she had been snorkeling in Indonesia. And we were talking about traveling and seeing all the different places in the world. And those are some of my most favorite conversations with people. Where have you gone? What have you done? What do you find? What's your favorite place? Or where would you love to go? What's in your mind's eye that you'd love to see? So we're talking about that stuff. Anyway, she goes to Indonesia and she has this opportunity to go snorkeling. And she was actually quite afraid of it because some people struggle with being submerged and it's kind of an intense thing. So she was walking along sort of in tide pools and just looking at everything. And then she says, no, I'm going to do it. So she got the snorkeling gear. She put it on. She put her head in the water, went underneath. And she said it was like going from black and white to color TV. And then she described it like this. She said, it was almost a spiritual experience. I was absolutely overwhelmed by the tropical fish and the coral. It was absolutely incredible. And in that moment, she was just blown away by just the few feet in front of her. So imagine God, who has created everything, who is aware of everything, who is interacting with absolutely everything. How much joy he takes from that constantly, all of the time. There's still things, there's still species, plants and animals and fish and insects that we are actually discovering on the planet. But God knows about all of them. He made all of them and he's pleased by all of it. And so that fills him with joy also. He's the source of all things filled with joy. The Trinitarian relationship, he's filled with joy. Through creation, he's filled with joy. And then fourthly, we find that God finds joy in us. Finds joy in humanity. As the pinnacle of creation, we are loved and we're treasured by God. And God pursues us to know him, to live with him, to enjoy him, and enjoy what he has created. And we could go into great detail about how loved we are by God, but I think that Leanne did that very well last week. But we can look at one great example, a story that Jesus told that many of us are familiar with, but it's a reason that we are struck by it because of the deep, beautiful truth that comes out of it, of the joy of God. There's a son, and Jesus tells this story to his disciples and to those who are listening, who are around him. A son who decides to leave his father's home. A son who decides essentially to spit in his father's face and say, I wish you were dead, give me your inheritance now. And he goes off and he spends it on wild living. He comes to the end of himself, as many of us do, and understanding what that kind of life leads to, realizes that he's got nothing, that all his friends have abandoned him, that he's broken and he's living with pigs. And so he says, it would be better for me than to starve here, than to go back and work for my father, at least as a slave. Maybe he'd take me back that way. So he goes back to his father and he expects that his father is going to scold him, going to be mean to him, going to put him down, but instead the father, what? Is there moving towards him with open arms, embraces him, puts a robe on him, covers his nakedness, puts a ring on his finger, says, you're back in the family. Here's a seal for you. And then he says, what? We must throw a great party. We got to throw a party. God is especially pleased with us when what is lost is found. That brings him incredible joy, according to Jesus. And so he says, get the best food possible. Let's throw a party. And he throws one. And that would be a great end to the story, but Jesus continues. It gets even better. They're throwing this party, but the older brother, who has never left home, he's been the good boy, he's not really pleased with the situation because he's always done things this way. And then this kid comes back from wild living and dad throws him a party. Well, he's not excited about it, so he refuses to come in. But Jesus tells us that the father goes out to the older brother and pleads with him. The word is pleads with him. Would you please come in and celebrate? Because we have to party. That's a picture of a joyful God, of a God who likes to celebrate over you, and a God who wants to celebrate with you, along with you, for what's going on in your life and the lives of the people around you. So God is filled with all kinds of different joy, and those four kinds of joy come together to obviously paint for us, as God in the scriptures, an incredibly, overwhelmingly happy and joyful God. And I wonder how I missed that. And I'm wondering, as I read the scriptures over and over again, how important it is for me to understand of where my perspective of God comes from and let the scriptures truly inform it. God is joyful, overflowing with joy. Let's take a look at Christian joy then. If God is filled with joy and we are with him and he's supposed to rub off on us, what does that joy look like for us? What is our joy, and what does joy from God look like? First of all, we have joy because of grace. And this is where the word that Paul uses is particularly important. The word is kara, and it has some interesting roots to it. Joy, or kara, is probably best translated joy because of grace. So the kind of joy that we find as Christians is because of the grace of God. Or another interpretation would be joy because of grace recognized. Our awareness of the overflowing love and grace of God, Paul writes, should bring us to a place of deep joy. So the joy that's found in a Christian is what comes from the awareness of the grace of God. And it's almost a kind of thankfulness or a response to reality. And God gives us all kinds of grace, and sometimes we have limited perspectives of it. We might just see grace as the forgiveness of our sins, and that is a big thing. That is a big deal. But it's also more. There's all kinds of grace that God pours out to us. Safety for family, provision, life, enjoyment of life. There's small graces that we walk in every day, and that's constantly flowing from God. Paul says living in that awareness of how gracious God is to us should fill us with joy. Not just the covering of our sin, but the daily grace that we experience in him. In the Psalms, the writer is reflecting at one point, this is one of my favorite passages in the Psalms, on how good and gracious and how God sustains and protects and how he is with him. And he says at one point, it's too wonderful. It's too amazing. I can't wrap my head around it. And people in the scriptures and ancient Christians and us today are constantly trying to wrap our heads around how good God is when we actually come into the awareness of his grace. And sometimes we sense it, sometimes we're missing it. But when we are aware of it, usually we're filled with this inexpressible kind of joy. So we have joy because we're actually connected to, we are actually one with God, who is the originator of grace. He is grace. We find joy in God himself. We find joy because we find God. It's all in him. And because God is the source of joy, We are connected and aware of him, and we find ourselves sustained by deep, unshakable joy. Also, wonderfully enough, we find joy in all the things that God finds joy in. We find joy in the fact that he is the creator and sustainer of all things. We find joy in understanding and being a part of the Trinity now, to actually interact with the Father, the Son, the Spirit, to be in that dance with them. We find joy in creation. And we find joy in the fact that God celebrates us and he celebrates those around us. We find joy not just in the grace that he pours out to us, but also in the things that he enjoys. And the scriptures tell us that he invites us to enjoy all those things with him, to be a joyful people. Through living the love of Christ, one writer says, man's being is filled with inexpressible joy, as well as from living with the righteousness of Christ, the goodness of Christ, the humility and meekness of Christ. And when man looks into himself, behold, he is completely filled with divine joy, and there is not a trace of grief or fear of death in him. That's the kind of life we will live if we're aware of the grace of God and interacting with the love of Christ daily and consistently. There's another part to joy that Paul is intending to get across to us, and that is joy no matter what. Joy no matter what. We can have joy no matter what. And this is key. Because joy is based on God, who is constant and unwavering, it means it's not circumstantial. And this is where the happiness of our culture falls short. Because he's constant and because nothing can actually separate us from the love of God, whatever place or situation we find ourselves in, we can still find joy in and through God. And this is the kind of joy that doesn't make a lot of sense to people. Perhaps this is the character of joy that is the Flanders family. I don't know. But when you experience this joy and grace of God, you can find yourself in the most dreadful position imaginable and still be found in joy. We have lots of examples of this in the scriptures. One of the most obvious and weirdest stories for me is a man named Paul and a man named Silas who are wandering around preaching the gospel. And they go to one particular city, and people don't like that they're sharing about Jesus there because it's coming against their values. And they decide to arrest them. So they arrest Paul and Silas. Then they beat Paul and Silas, probably senseless. And they throw them in prison for the night. They lock them up in an uncomfortable position. And the prisoners begin to hear them doing what? Singing hymns of thankfulness to God, filled with joy. The most dreadful position imaginable. Not knowing what the morning will bring, but here they are singing, filled with joy. Makes absolutely no sense to those around them, but for some reason, they've got something that nobody else has. Doesn't mean they don't feel pain. Doesn't mean they necessarily don't wish they weren't in that circumstance. Doesn't mean they're not experiencing other sensations. But the overriding sense is that we're okay because God is with us and nothing can touch that. Nothing can beat that. They have such complete wholeness and joy in that moment that they choose to sing. And that's one of the reasons that we sing every Sunday here as well. I used to think personally that joy had to look a certain way. And so when I began to learn more about joy, I used to get a bit concerned because I worried that I wasn't necessarily an overly joyful person. I don't have a particularly crazy happy disposition all the time, and I don't always have the most positive outlook on life, but I've learned to walk in joy that's sometimes quiet. It's not as boisterous. It doesn't have to look a certain way. For some people, smiles or being demonstrative or extremely expressive is an outflowing of their inner joy in their relationship with God. But some might want to shout. Others might just be quiet. They might just feel whole. They might just be full of joy, and they're not necessarily going to express it how others are going to express it. And that's okay. The question that we want to ask is our joy or our happiness or our contentment, is it circumstantial or is it completely dependent on God? Is what I'm sensing joy? Is a question that I'd like for us to ask ourselves today in this moment. Is it consistent rather than circumstantial? If it's circumstantial, it's probably situational happiness. I would describe it as that. Or situational enjoyment. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. God wishes for us to enjoy what is before us. But the question is, what is underneath all of it? And have we tapped into that? Are we aware of the deep, sustaining, unwavering joy that comes from the experience of grace and relationship with the Creator of all things? Are we aware of the deep, sustaining, unwavering joy that comes from the experience of grace and relationship with the Creator of all things? That is available to you. I want to say that. There's many of you in the room who don't believe that that is possible. For you to feel a sense of joy and completeness and wholeness because of a certain situation or a mental disposition or anything. But that is available to you. You can find that in Jesus, that is available to you. It might not look like the person next to you, but it is available to you. The first Christians loved this idea so much, this joy, this contentment, and the grace of God, that they actually morphed it and it turned into a bit of a greeting. We see it often in Paul's letters, where he signs off, "Grace and peace." Grace and peace. And charis is a word that comes from kara. And so this sense of grace because of joy actually became a greeting, both in their letters and perhaps even in how they interacted with each other. Can you imagine interacting with one another like that? When you see somebody, you're so filled with the understanding of God's grace and happiness towards you that you say, happiness because of grace, fulfillment because of grace, hope because of grace, life because of grace, overwhelming, abundant joy because of grace. Kind of puts some, how's it going? to shame a little bit, doesn't it? And that's what Jesus wants for us. That's what is available to us. I loved the word that Doug had for us sort of at the end of music there, of the bread and what is available in the sweet presence of Jesus. I was praying yesterday and I felt for a while another sort of image that was pressed on me. And I felt like God was saying to me, and I think he wanted me to share this as well with you. He says, why do you treat me like I'm a dried up well? That's not who I am. Why do you go to other wells that are a joke of a well? You go to these places and you lower your rickety bucket and you sort of just scoop out this putrid water and you come up and that's what you're sustaining yourself on. You don't have to live like that. And I felt God saying to me, I am a deep well. I am a well with no bottom. And there is such fresh water bursting up that is accessible for you, life and hope and joy and peace, that you can't possibly imagine it. Why are you going to these other places, other wells? Why do you view me like that? And the picture that I had of this well was this incredible stone well. And it didn't even have, I don't know any well technical terms, so you have to forgive me on that. It didn't have one of those things that you pulley systems. Didn't even need it because it was just overflowing with fresh water. And it was like, I had a picture of, he said, you could dive in if you wanted to and try and swim down to find the depths of me, and you never could because the current would push you up. There's so much. Are you aware of how much joy, contentment, hope, and life you can find in me? And I felt my response in prayer was, Lord, sometimes I'm not aware of it. So my prayer for us this morning is that we would become aware of it. And so my challenge for us this week is very similar to Leanne's challenge last week. And similar to the challenges that you're going to hear all through the summer, to find love, to find joy, next week when Doug talks about peace, to find all these things, we must come to Jesus. We must immerse ourselves in Jesus. And so the challenge this week is to enjoy God. Would we go into this week enjoying Him and taking a posture of, God, this week I'm going to enjoy You. I'm going to enjoy life with You. I'm going to enjoy moments with You. I'm going to enjoy being sustained by You in everything that I'm walking through. That's my hope for myself this week and my prayer for all of us. We're gonna wrap up because we're out of time. I'd love to talk about this longer, but why don't we stand? And I would love to pray over us as we go into this week that we would be filled with His love and His joy. Jesus, very simply, we come before You and we ask that You'd make us aware of who You are in deeper ways. Thank You, God, that You are a joyful God, that You are a God who is brimming with positivity, brimming with hope, brimming with joy. And we pray that You would help us to experience some of that. I ask, Jesus, that if some of us in the room need You to adjust our perspective of You, I pray that You would do that by the work of Your Spirit. And I pray, Jesus, that all of us, as we go out this week and we live amongst other people, that we would experience Your deep joy and experience You. God, some of us are new at this, and we don't know exactly what that's supposed to look like, but I pray that You would teach us by Your Spirit. I pray that You would speak to us. I pray that we would be open to You, we'd listen to You, and You would lead us. And for those of us, Jesus, that have known You for a while and have allowed things to get stale, I pray that You would open our eyes to You again in a new and a fresh way to experience Your depth and Your beauty, Your refreshment. In Jesus' name, we all said, amen. Have a fantastic Sunday. We will see you next week as we move to peace, if not before then.